We are listening to Mrs. Hazel Haynes Cushman, granddaughter of J. Wingate Haynes, an original settler of Maple Grove Settlement.
J. Wingate Haynes, a Quaker, came to Aroostook County and took up 1,000 acres of land at what is now known as Maple Grove. He built his sawmill on the Johnson Brook. This is now known as Bryant's Pond. The Haineses cleared their land and built a home at Maple Grove. He was very interested in the progress of the community. To get to Houghton or Bangor, they had to go by way of Presque Isle. Mr. Haynes and his neighbors, there was the Ellises, the Fowlers, Stevenses, and others, decided to cut through a dense woods from Fort Fairfield to Mars Hill to shorten the road south. This they accomplished. Before they made the new road, the settlers hired a man to go to Houghton every month and pick up the mail. After the new road was made, it was delivered to Fort Fairfield twice a month. The first post office was at Maple Grove. The first schoolhouse was a rude affair. Plank benches ran around the room. In the center was a large stove. Each settlement had a schoolhouse. The children did not have books. They learned their letters from liniment bottles, the Bible, hymn books, almanacs, and papers. Just beyond the Maple Grove turn on the road to Houghton, there's an old cemetery. Near this old cemetery, the settlers found clay. They came from all the different settlements to get this clay to make brick chimneys and fireplaces. Mr. Haynes, being a Quaker, he did not believe in war. Several of his sons went into the Civil War.
Hazel, you have a letter that you have in your possession from Dan'l Haynes to Fred Haynes, your father. This was written during the Civil War. In the letter, a reference to Albert Haynes is to another brother. There were three brothers concerned with this letter.
Yes, I don't know. This letter is quite dim. I'll try and read it. Dear brother, thinking a letter from me would be acceptable, and having nothing to do this forenoon, I will pen a few lines to you, perhaps to while away the time, and let you know how we prosper. It is the same old story with us, waiting for horses. It is said that we will get 100 today, which would be about one half that allotted to us. There is no telling when that we shall get any more. Those that we draw today will be delivered to each company according to their color. We draw bay horses and will get all of that color. A part of us may leave for the regiment in a few days. I shall try and keep Albert, that is, with me. If one of us has to go, I shall get the sergeant to let the other go too. We have moved since I rode home before, about half a mile on the end of 14th Street, and encamped in a grove near the hospital. Have got a good chance, but do not have blankets, I guess, but have a better chance than we had down on 7th Street. I was up to the hospital and found Hiram Ellis Sunday. I had been trying to find him for a fortnight, but there is so many hospitals here that it is hard work to find anyone in them. He is very low in strength. I have been to see him several times and shall call every day while I stay here. Tell his folks that he is gaining daily and is gaining fast as can be expected. for one so low. Tell them I wrote to Uncle Freeman Sunday and told him about where to direct him at the Columbia Hospital, Washington, D.C., and not to put the first Maine Cavalry on it. Albert is out drilling. Be with the saber exercises now. We'll be in. Well, you could say find it very hard as yet. But when he goes through what some of us have, he will sing a different tune. We live tip-top here, and if it was not for being the war closing this fall, I should like to stay here. But it looks to me as if now was the time for a blow to be struck, and every soldier ought to be with his regiment. There is a move on foot near here, and you may look out for hard work soon. I must now close right soon all hands. I have received but 5 letters for as many weeks. Have not received any from you since I came here, and have written several, hoping to hear from you more regularly in the future. I remain as ever your well-wishing brother, Dan'l Haynes. That was to my father during the Civil War. My Frederick Haynes saw the new recruits marching by one day. By the house. He went out and joined them, only to be pulled out by his father. Later, he was 18 years old and weighed 180 pounds. When the recruits went by, that time, he joined them. On the way out of Bangor, they heard that Lincoln was shot, so that ended his career in the army. Grandfather Haynes used to keep his sons out of the war. One way he used to keep them out of the war was to give them a 200-acre farm if they stayed home. My father later had to pay $500 for his farm. In later years, the farmers began to raise potatoes. At the time, there was no potato machinery to be bought. My father invented the first horse-drawn cultivator. I have a picture of a 20-acre field of potatoes being dug by hand diggers. They would dig out a row or two and then pick them up. This 20-acre field of my father's was the largest in Aroostook County at the time. That was around 1905. As they planted more potatoes, they began to look for an outlet for their crops. The Grange was strong at the time as a social and business meeting place. They bargained in grass seed, oats, and fertilizer. They decided to send a man south into Virginia, New Jersey, Delaware, and places to find an outlet for the potatoes. They would give my father the quantity and kind of potatoes they had to sell. He went south and contacted the Grangers and individuals there. It became a very successful business proposition. Later, my father became a buyer and shipper on his own. They have been shipping that way ever since.
Hazel, when the first settlers came here, they must have had a little difficulty in obtaining some of their supplies.
Well, as it was told me, sometimes the settlers made the long trip to Bangor by oxen. The things they could not raise, they had to go to Bangor to purchase. Among the things they brought back were molasses and household articles, also axes, shovels, and so forth, things they couldn't possibly get here. It took them a week or more each way. The settlers raised their wool and spun their yarn. They also had the looms from which they made the cloth of different kinds. They made their dresses, underwear, and homespun suits. and they also knitted their stockings, mittens, scarves, caps, and so forth. I have a large double all-wool blanket that my grandmother Haynes made on her loom. This blanket is very finely woven. It has three red stripes on either ends. The ends are blanket stitched.
An item that Hazel Cushman has from the Lewiston Weekly Journal, September 5, 1906. Our rustic letter by the agricultural editor of the Lewiston Weekly Journal. Rustic County is still booming. I herewith tell you something about six farms around Fort Fairfield that are joined together. They are owned and occupied by Fred M. Haynes, Linwood Seeley, Frank Haynes, William Churchill, Franklin Grant, and Fred Richardson. These six farms comprise an average 200 acres each. At the present time, there are 240 acres or more of potatoes, about an equal amount of grain, and from 75 to 100 tons of hay are cut each year. They are on a road which is almost as straight as an arrow and as level as Trotting Park. Some 12 years ago, Mr. Seeley came here and purchased his farm for $5,000, which is an index to the increased value of these farms and of the prosperity of these farmers during the past 10 or 12 years. On his farm on the road, he has about 200 rods of wire fence with iron posts, which cost $1 a rod, while a gate post cost $4 each. Mr. Seeley keeps more good stock than the average Aroostook farmer and is a fancier of good horses and some trotters which he enjoys holding the reins over. We stopped overnight with Mr. and Mrs. Fred M. Haynes. They have a fine farm residence, the above photo being one of the six houses on this beautiful spot which State Master Gardner and Professor Rogers say they have not seen surpassed in their travels in Maine or elsewhere. The fine grounds of the Haynes home are laid in an artistic fashion, and driveways and walks, free trees and shrubbery, a hedge with white, pink, and crimson rose bushes, which have roses from the 20th of June until the frost kill them in the fall. They have also large clumps of hydrangeas with a beautiful border around the rosebush hedge with various kinds of flowers encircling the house and dotting the lawn. Mr. Haynes was the son of Joseph Wingate Haynes, who came to Aroostook many years ago, we think about 1842, from Holowa, and became an Aroostook pioneer. He was widely known in the county because of large 500-acre farm and for the fine herd of Hereford stock which he kept. The prosperity of the farmers of this neighborhood is attested to by the picture of Mr. Haynes' home and by the rise in the farm property values. But this has come, and these fine home residents made not without hard work, industrial habits, prudence, and perseverance on the part of the wives and farmers, sons and daughters, as well as the father and owner. When Mr. Haynes came to this farm over 25 years ago, he purchased it for $500. It contained 175 acres, only 10 of which were cleared, where there now is 150 in good tillage condition, and Mr. Haynes can plow around all of the 150 acres. Mr. Haynes has practically made his farm out of the wilderness. The farm has a fine orchard of about 800 apple trees, now in good bearing condition, with a diverse number of varieties. This farm is largely as level as a floor, and mowers and reapers can be used upon all of it. We asked Mr. Haynes if he had any objection to stating how much he had cleared in any one year above expenses, and after thinking for a moment he said, "I have cleared over $3,000 a year on an average for several years. This shows what an heuristic farmer can do, or a little about it. And when you visit Mr. Haynes' home and see how it is furnished like a city mansion with large rooms, bathroom, heated by hot water, a fine piano, pictures in every room, and with a family of six children whom he has and is giving a first-class education, and helped to settle two or three near home, one upon a $20,000 farm, and the other one, the son paid $10,000 for his, and is now worth much more. It shows what one can do who lives within his income, and what one can do who lives and practices greater economy to buy and pay for a farm. Mr. Haynes and his sons raised last year 6,000 barrels of potatoes. He sells his potatoes to New Jersey farmers for seed. He commenced by selling one car to a New Jersey grange, and last winter he sold 5,000 barrels to one New Jersey grange and 2,000 more to other granges. His trade with the New Jersey granges is increasing year by year. Mr. Haynes' seed trade is an object lesson of what one can do in furnishing good seed and doing business directly with the seed men and the consumers.
We're listening to Mary Toll Kimball, and she's going to tell some about her family and read a letter.
The two letters that I am reading are by my grandmother, Mary Estes Toll, wife of LaForest Valdessa Toll. He lived and worked with the Hoyts around 1857 while clearing lands and building his home. Part of the original house still stands on what is now called the Everett Toll Farm. LaForest and Mary Estes were married in 1865. Their four children were Charles Melvin, Clara Louise, Hiram Edgar, and Myron LaForest. Hiram was my father. LaForest enlisted in the 22nd Maine Regiment, Company G, for 9 months in the Civil War. He was afterwards drafted, but never called for. Mary Estes Toll was the daughter of Valentine Estes, who was one of the early Quaker ministers at the Friends Meeting House. During their married life, they were members of the Free Baptist Church. For 18 years, my grandfather was clerk of the Free Baptist Quarterly Meeting. He was also a deacon, and he was prominent in town affairs, holding the principal offices. All right. Fort Fairfield, Maine, February 19, 1888. Dear Grandmother, I have thought that perhaps a few lines from your granddaughter might be acceptable. I thought I would make one more effort to write. I have commenced two or three letters written the last 6 months, but did not get them finished. We are all well as common. LaForest, Charlie, and Clara have gone over to the Friends' house to prayer meeting. They have very good meetings there. W.P. Varney takes charge of the meeting. Uncle Jonathan and wife were there. They live 6 miles from the meeting house. They come to meeting when the roads are good. Charlie and Clara were down to Louise's 2 weeks ago tomorrow. Louise thought they would be up here last week if the roads were good. I have not seen one of the family since sometime before Christmas. Louise has got a nice baby. He is some over a year old and full of mischief. Her little girl is getting to be quite a help. She washes dishes and does lots of things to save steps. It does not seem but a very short time ago that my girl was her age. Now she is a young woman. She is as tall as I am, but very slim. I often think I don't know what I could do without her. She is such a help. And I don't know how we could get along without Charlie. He is a good boy to work, better than anyone his father could hire. But it is only little over a year before he will be 21. The other boys are growing fast. My baby is 5 in July. He says he is not baby, now he has got pants, but he loves to get into my lap and be rocked. Some think he looks just like father. I think he does some. LaForest thought he was growing poor this winter, but he was weighed a week ago, and he weighed 220. Not very poor yet. You don't know how bad I felt to think I could not go to China last fall. I don't think Affy thought I wanted to come very bad, but I did. I supposed until the day before we started that I was going there, but LaForest thought he could not be gone so long as we expected. I have wished I had stopped at Bassaboro and let him go on to Lewiston if he wanted to. He says I may go next fall, but it is hard to leave home. I should like to see you and the rest of the folks. If we do not meet on earth, I hope we shall meet in heaven where there are many dear friends. I think of you very often and think you must be lonely, but I know you have a dear friend that is always with you. I often think, what should I do without that friend? When I look over my life and see the crooked paths I have made, I think, what would my life have been without his help? I try every day to trust him more and to say, what shall I render unto my God for all his goodness to me? I feel he has followed me all the days of my life. Clara wrote to Aunt Affy last Sabbath. I am glad she has got such a good chance as she has. Tell Aunt Hannah she need not think I would not be glad to see her, for I should. As it is getting late, I must close with love to you. If I was a good hand to write, I would write oftener, but I do not write many letters now, so it is more of a task. Give my respects to all inquiring friends from your granddaughter, Mary. The other letter is to Mrs. Elmira Tibbetts, 1889. Aunt Elmira, as I have been writing to Grandma, I thought it would take the liberty to write you a few lines. I wish you much joy in your new home. Hope you enjoy it much. I suppose the little boys are with you, are they not? They must be quite large boys now. Our two little boys do lots of chores about the barn. One is past 9, the other most 6. They are lots of company for each other. I want you to write me how Grandma is. Does she fail much? How I wish I could run in and see her, but I cannot. I hope you will write soon. Love to you. M.E. Toll, Fort Fairfield. The following are excerpts from a cookbook given to me by my Aunt Clara Toll Parsons. It was compiled in 1888. It contains many ads, recipes, menus, and household ends. The following is one of her recipes for mincemeat. 1 bowl chopped meat, 2 bowls chopped apples, 1 bowl chopped raisins, 1 bowl currants, 1/2 bowl chopped citron, 2 cups molasses, 2 cups sugar, 2 cups shrub, 1 tablespoonful each cloves, cinnamon, and nutmeg, large spoonful salt, 1/4 spoonful pepper. Lay bits of butter over the plate when the pie is made. The following is a sample of one day's menu, Sunday, December 1st. It is called Bill of Fare in the book. Breakfast. Oatmeal, baked beans, brown bread, raised biscuits, donuts, coffee. Dinner. Roast chickens, escalloped oysters, mashed potatoes, squash, celery, pickles, white bread, fruit pudding with foam sauce, apples, coffee. Supper, oyster stew, fancy crackers, baked sweet apples with cream, cookies, milk, and tea. The following is about kerosene in the laundry, and it's called a household hint. Some laundresses consider kerosene a great help in washing, as it lessens the amount of rubbing required. In using it, cut 1 pound of soap fine in sufficient water to form a thick suds. Add to this 2 1/2 tablespoons of kerosene. To every gallon of water, stir in a pint of the solution. If any oil appears on the top, add more soap and water. Then boil the clothes. Or use 1 cup soft soap with 1 teaspoonful of kerosene thoroughly mixed into 3 gallons of water. Goodyear's advertisement was teas, coffees, spices, flour. H.N. Goodyear, wholesale and retail grocer. Keeps well insured, tries to buy low, pays bills promptly, and makes a specialty of attending to his own business. From choice groceries only can fine cooking be done. We claim that our stock of groceries is not excelled in the rustic, that by making our business a study, we can and do supply very choice quality at very close prices. We court inspection of our store and stock. Please call in as you pass by. Fort Fairfield, Maine.